Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Get $25 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/know-how. And by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's lynda.com/know-how. On this episode of Know How,
we've got DMX Lighting,
an easy way to make apps for your drone.
Your questions, our answers.
It's the TWiT show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next whoever of minutes, we're going to be talking about the projects that we've been playing with.
However long Alex lets us go for.
Right. Wait,
before he shows the clock.
Doot.
We were working on doing that in sync.
We were trying to get that synced up. Now, we've got actually got a really packed show. We're not going to get through nearly all of it.
We'll
again,
see about
because
that.
Because Alex won't let us. But we want to show you a little bit about DMX Lighting.
Yep.
We're continuing that series on camera photography and setting up your own podcast studio. We've got something from Maker Faire, actually a company that I really want to have on the show. I want to have them on Know How and I want to have them on Coding 101. So you're going to see that. Then we've been, you know what? The community is really, really active, and we're kind of falling behind on questions. So
we got to do something about that.
Yeah, we're going to have to push through a lot of these because I don't like letting them.
We're going to get through all, what did you say, six of them?
No, we're not.
We'll try. We'll do what we can. Yeah.
But before we do that, I got a question both for you and for Alex, because Alex is a pilot. What do you two do about airplane noise?
About noise?
Noise.
There's, like, nothing that we can do about it, right?
Well, I mean, like, Alex uses... You has, like, professional headphones.
Noise-canceling headphones.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because it's that drone of the engine and the wind noise.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a certain level that you have to be above to when we're flying? Because Alex flies the small Cessna planes.
Right. Those are really noisy.
What's the minimum height that you can be at?
For what?
Like when you're flying over residential areas and stuff like that.
Yeah, 30 like feet. 2,000 feet.
30 feet.
I don't.
That
know.
Would be
I don't
fun.
Fly professionally.
Do you think? I mean, mostly that's probably for safety, but is that also because of noise?
Yeah, they are pretty loud.
There are noise abatement areas.
Yeah, okay.
To be careful of.
But specifically, we're talking about the people who are inside the plane. As you know, we all know it's pretty dang noisy, and that's why I have these. This was a review a long, long time ago, and Audio Technica actually didn't want them back, so I kept them. These are the ANC9s. These are probably my favorite set of noise-canceling headphones ever. They are so comfortable. I've had them on my ears for an 18-hour flight.
I was going to say, they look like they've been well used.
They're incredibly well used. It's does this tri-level cancellation so that it's not like the Bose headsets where either it's on or off. You can select the level of cancellation because, if Alex, you must know this. If you have a set of headphones and the cancellation is too high, It feels weird, like there's too much of an absence of sound.
Yeah, it kind of like sucks the air out of your head.
Yeah, and it actually makes me dizzy.
Yeah.
So that's, basically the ways that we've been avoiding aircraft noise are by either blocking it out with earplugs or by using some sort of technology like noise-canceling headsets to counter the sound waves and reduce it that way. But check this out. There's actually a research group that may have figured out a way to reduce the noise in planes without having you put anything over your ears.
So changing something with the structure of the cabin? Or
A little bit, yeah. So when we talk about noise in planes, there's really...
It sounds like there's a plane going over right now.
Oh, how about that? No, but we're talking...
I wish the studio was a giant dirigible or something where you're floating
around.
Not
a blimp. It's a dirigible.
Yes.
No, but when we're talking about noise, there's two types of noise in the plane. There's the continuous and the non-continuous.
Uh-huh.
And the continuous would be things like engine noise and wind noise. And
right.
non-continuous would be conversation.
Right.
Right. Or like announcements that they have to make over the in-flight PA.
Mm-hmm.
Continuous noise on the ground is going to run you between 60 and 65 decibels. On takeoff, that's typically the highest. It's 80 to 85 decibels. In a small plane, it can get above 90 decibels, which is really not good for you. And then cruising and landing, it's about 75 to 80 decibels.
Okay.
That means that the non-continuous, the conversational noise, has to go above that to be heard. So conversation
right.
can actually get you up into like the 81 to 85 decibel range during cruising. It's really not good.
Yeah, I've run into that where you kind of feel like you have to yell to hear somebody who's sitting, or if you have like the aisle between you, like,
right.
hey, right. turn on your DS. We're going to play games. Get ready.
All right, we're going to play. Get your thing on.
Okay, exactly. Okay,
see,
I'm good.
That's how it works.
Baby crying. Yeah.
But if you can reduce the amount of continuous noise, mm-hmm. it actually reduces the level at which conversation has to be spoken. And you make for a much quieter cabin.
I
That's
like that.
Exactly what some researchers over at, I think it was the University of Washington and MIT. Oh, sorry, North Carolina State and MIT. They designed a 0.25 millimeter sheet of latex rubber that can cover the existing honeycomb structure that forms the skin of a modern aircraft. Because the skin is actually, it's a honeycomb lattice. It's very, very strong.
Hmm.
But when you stretch a sheet of this latex over that honeycomb structure, it essentially makes thousands of little drums. It's like you're stretching, the skin over a drum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that isolates the noise?
Well, even better than that, because of the frequency at which those drums resonate,
yeah.
they actually are incredibly good at bouncing off low-frequency sound, which is engine noise.
Okay, that's
right?
cool.
In fact, they found out that by doing this, they can reduce the continuous noise in the cabin by 100 to 1,000 times. So you drop the noise from about 75 to 80 decibels while cruising down to like 45 to 50 decibels.
That's pretty cool.
It's huge. I mean, that's a tremendous... I mean, remember...
That's dramatic.
It's not a linear scale.
No.
Every time you go up a decibel, you're actually doubling the amount of sound energy. So
right.
it is a fantastic amount of energy... that they're bouncing back outside of the cabin.
Pretty simple solution, too.
It's a simple solution, and more importantly, it's light. Because remember,
yeah.
planes...
Every little bit counts. I've watched Alex do his weight calculations when you try to figure out how much fuel you need for certain situations.
Trying to balance if I should eat breakfast before the
right.
flight or
right.
afterwards.
Right, or after the flight.
If the pancakes will put me over the limit.
And that's especially for a small plane, because like if you have nose heavy, a plane
uh-huh.
will fly badly.
Yeah.
If you are very tail heavy, a plane will fly once because you don't recover. You go tail heavy and then you die.
Either way is bad.
Either yeah. way is
so
bad.
There's a center of gravity that you
right.
have to calculate.
But one way you're definitely dead. But see,
okay.
that's the thing. Weight is something that's important even on large airliners because it cuts into the efficiency. It cuts
right.
into the economy. If your plane's too heavy, you don't carry as much cargo and passengers, and therefore you have to charge each passenger and every pound of cargo more. Or per distance traveled, right?
Nice. Did they mention an article if they were going to be implementing this on like retrofitting
yes.
aircraft now?
Right, yeah. That's the other good thing. It's a very easy solution.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just putting a condom on the cabin.
on the to keep you safe.
It's a special latex, though.
Yeah.
They say within 5 to 6 years, you're going to start to see the solution. And every time you have a plane that gets retrofitted,
yeah.
they're going to be able to outfit that honeycomb structure with just a super thin layer of latex. And it's only going to add 5 to 6% of weight to the skin of the aircraft, which is actually a very small percentage of the overall weight of the aircraft. So you're talking about not that much at all for a huge increase in comfort.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if we could just do that to one of the planes Alex flies.
I wonder if people can just start wearing like latex bags over their head.
Yeah, it's like living inside of noise-canceling headphones.
It's not a good thing.
No.
Okay, let's go ahead and move away from plane condoms and talk a little bit about DMX lighting.
Yeah, so these are some lights that you've had, in the no-hole. We use it for some of our shoots and stuff like that. I like playing with them because of all the pretty colors.
Pretty colors. Now, this is a wash light, a DMX LED-based wash light. Now, wash lights provide a lot of light.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they do. They're designed to just really provide a boost of color, but they can't be focused. So they're not like a Parcan. They're not like a Fresnel lens. These are designed just to flood an area. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, they're designed to flood an area with a bunch of pretty colors, which is nice, right?
I mean, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about these wash lights. Because when we've been using these wash lights over the last couple of years, you've mm-hmm. seen them in my reviews. If you've ever yep. seen a segment that I've shot for Before You Buy or for Know How, you've seen my wash lights in the background. Now, I have these lined up behind my shelves. And as you can see, I can change the color to be pretty much any color I want, which
yeah.
is nice.
It looks cool. And I think we use them around the studio, too, for the to make the sets look different.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's one of the nicest things. I can take one set and I can make it look 50 different ways just by changing the color variations on the wash lights that I have in the back. Very early on, I didn't have a great setup. I had a lot of, you know, overlight and it didn't look great. But I figured out better ways to get the most out of the color that I'm pushing onto my walls. These are bare walls, but I have also created a studio where I had a muslin, which is, you know, it's a drop.
The black sheet, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So that I've been able to, add texture. In fact, Ryan Shroud on PC Perspective, he does a great thing with a foam wall.
Yeah.
That's with wash lights, angles, and some foam on the wall. It looks beautiful. And here at the Twit TV studios, we are all about the wash lights. I mean, all of our sets have LED wash lights so we can change the color. In fact, the news desk, we have specific color ranges for each program. You know this. You TD'd, so.
Yeah, they're really fun to play with. And that's because we're kind of limited on space, we have, what, four sets now? Four or five sets here, and we use different colors to kind of make shows look a little bit different from each other.
Exactly.
So we can have
one set here that we can dress up for different shows just by changing the color of the LED wash lights.
Yeah, and some colors work better than others, but it's pretty neat.
It is very...
Patrick took notice.
Great, he's getting all colorful.
We've lured the engineers out.
Now, it used to be difficult to do this because there used to be a lot of proprietary protocols to communicate with lights, especially before we had LEDs, you'd have wash lights that you have to buy a dimmer pack from a specific company or it won't work properly.
We're not in that time anymore.
We're not in that time, thankfully. And it also means that because we now use a standardized communication protocol, the cost of these devices have plummeted. I mean, I remember the first time I bought a wash light array, it was like $1,500.
And that was probably like 40, 50 years ago? No. Okay. Sorry, hell no. How much is this one that we have here?
No, I'm not talking about
this. Oh, come on, Padre.
I forgot it.
You're not that old.
Dang. Wow. Okay. Gonna do me like that. No.
Didn't even have LEDs back then.
So this particular one, this is a very nicely built one. This is an American DJ Mega Bar. I have the longer ones in my studio, but I like to have a couple of these smaller ones because they're great for, you know, lighting up in a pinch.
Yeah.
I think this one was like $80. You can get the longer one for about $150.
Yeah.
I have like 10 of these in my studio, so I can adjust the light anywhere I need it. But this uses DMX 512.
The rapper?
Yes, the rapper. In fact, if I push this button, he'd start swearing.
Right, that's a censored button there.
DMX 512 is a communications protocol. And it's a couple of things, but it's the digital communication standard that has replaced all of those proprietary standards. So rather than having a dimmer pack that speaks a particular language, most devices on stage will speak DMX.
Okay.
And the nice thing about that is I can use it with wash lights, I can use it with par cans, I can use it with Fresnels, I can use it with fog machines, special effects machines,
and
laser
then you can
machines.
Have them all connected to the same board.
All connected to the same board, all speaking the same protocol. So it's really, really versatile, and it's you know, easy to set up because you daisy chain these. Now, let's talk. There are a few important notes that you have to know about DMX 512 before you all go out and buy a DMX system. One, it's unidirectional.
Unidirectional?
Right. So you speak from the controller to the bar and then maybe down the line. You talk, speak
so
to
when
each
you
device.
Daisy chain it?
Well, it just means that there's no feedback.
Right.
So when I push up all red, there is nothing from this bar speaking back to this controller saying, oh, yeah, I'm up at red. All it is this controller saying, bring red to full, bring red to full, bring red to full, bring red to full. If there is some sort of error here, and like for now, there's a break in the connection, I've brought up green, it doesn't do anything because it's stuck in the last state.
So you have no indication other than directly looking at it.
Right. So my controller has no idea that it's not receiving. It's just going, well, I'm sending the command, it's just not listening to me. And now it is.
Now, is that a limitation of DMX, or is that just the kind of a design of the hardware?
That was the design of the hardware. You know, back then, when we first started deploying DMX devices, there was no real reason to have two-way communication.
I guess not, yeah.
All two-way communication did was make it more expensive.
Hmm.
And yeah, so there's no error checking, but, I mean, these aren't exactly mission-critical devices. They're lighting. And maybe you get the lighting wrong, but...
I don't know about you, Padre, but I take my mood lighting pretty seriously. These are mission-critical.
One thing
I really like about these...
Let me light you up a little bit, Brian. Oh, look at that.
All right, a little too much there.
Hulk smash.
All right. So angry. They don't generate a lot of heat.
Obviously. LED, so very low on the heat, which is great. Another thing about the DMX 512, though, is that it's prone to interference. I've noticed this. Like, if I have this control panel on the same surge protector as, like, an incandescent light. If I turn on the incandescent light, it knocks everything off.
Wow, okay.
That's because DMX 512 is prone to electromagnetic interference.
How much
or
is
bad
this,
cables.
This board?
This was a $40 board.
Oh, okay.
I kind of like it because it's manual. It's all manual. Right. It's all analog. I can get this nice, smooth transition. I've got this other one. This is a nice one. This is also a DMX controller, but it allows me to control separate fixtures. I could have a bunch of different lights on different channels, and I can control them individually.
Right.
But this is digital, which means you don't get this. You don't get the smooth, like, up and down.
So it's just on or off, kind of?
Well, it kind of, like, jumps. It jumps, like, 255, 255 levels. It just goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I see.
I'm not great on that. Yeah.
Well, one of the things... So we have these set up in the no hole.
Right.
And sometimes when I come down and I go to turn it on, it's got the... What is it?
The blackout.
There's blackout, but also if you make like
sound active vibration.
Yeah, it's
so
sound activated.
We can do this.
Yeah.
Boom. This is actually used a lot by DJs,
so they don't have to touch it. They just let the music do.
They just let the music dance.
That's cool.
And we also do this whenever Greg comes in the office to try to trigger an epileptic seizure.
That's how we get rid of them. You thought you could take a nap down here?
Nope. Okay, now a couple of the good things about DMX. First, it is daisy chainable. So I've got one bar right here. What I can do is I've got a second bar. And not only am I going to be able to daisy chain the data, so I'm daisy chaining the DMX control signal, and I'm also daisy chaining power. Which is nice because I can connect up to, I think it's 32 load units per bus before it starts not liking me.
So 32 of these in a daisy chain?
In a daisy chain per bus. And I can run multiple buses. So I've got DMX going in, DMX coming out, DMX going in. And now when I do it, I can control two at the same time.
So pretty.
Right, and it's nice and easy. Now, a lot of these units, if you go ahead and look at the side view here, a lot of these units will have some sort of control panel, and it allows me to actually control the lights from here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
in case
pain in the butt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's if you don't have a board or something, right?
Exactly. But you can set channels. So, like, if I wanted to have multiple channels, I could set this to react to different DMX channels.
Oh.
And I could actually, even though these are daisy-chained together, I could have these two lights... at different colors because I'm using two different controller that understands multiple buses.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love having these things around.
Yeah.
They really brighten up sets and you can change the colors.
And now we don't really have a problem in the studio, and I'm assuming no one in the audience has a studio that's going to run over 1,200 meters of cable because that's the limitation of DMX.
Oh, okay.
But you could repeat it. You could use a signal splitter and basically get another 1,200 meters and another 1,200 meters.
Do they draw a lot of power?
This is a low power bus. I think this draws like 7 watts at its full.
Nice.
And they're ultra, ultra simple to set up. It took me probably 3 minutes. I had no idea how DMX worked. It took me about 3 minutes to get them up. I'm like, oh, okay, that's how they work. Nice and easy.
That's what you want from you want plug and play when you're using this sort of stuff.
Now, a few things we should probably talk about. Originally, DMX 512 had, go ahead and go to the side view again. It had a standard for a 5-pin XLR connector. And that was so that you wouldn't confuse it with the 3-pin microphone XLR connector.
Right, because I'm assuming you can't use that.
I am.
You can. Okay, cool.
So I've got one real DMX cable here, and I've got one microphone cable. You really shouldn't use microphone cables. It doesn't like microphone cables. Microphone cables can have the wrong impedance, and it causes weird things.
Okay, but you're not going to, like, burn it out, are you, if you use a...
No. You just might get errant signals. But what I've got is I actually have... They have actual DMX-rated cables that you can buy. And they're going to be more expensive than standard microphone cables.
The only cables I buy are Monster branded. do you have any of those?
That's what I thought. I thought, this is stupid. But after having used these things for, like, 3 years... Uh-huh. There actually is a difference. You do notice you don't get as many errors when you're using real DMX cables.
I'm always skeptical when it comes to cables.
Super skeptical. I am super skeptical, but it does make a difference. Now, if you don't care about having to reset the lights every couple of days because you had an errant signal, then don't spend the extra money.
I mean, how much more is
a
cable like that?
A buck or two. I mean, it's really not that much.
Fine.
More.
I guess I'll use the right cables then.
Yeah. And what it comes down to is it's they're maintained better. Especially in a place like this, our microphone cables kind of get beat to heck.
Yeah, they're being wrapped up and unwrapped all the time and ran over by desk chairs and the TriCaster roundabout thing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we will be doing more with this because we do want to complete a full studio. And I like DMX lighting just because it can do so much with your existing studio. It can completely change the character. As you saw in the video and as you see around the Twit Brick House, it changes the way that a set looks. It really gives it character. And it's a good way to cheaply add that expensive look.
Bling factor.
The bling factor. Yeah. Backlighting is good. It makes things pop. Yeah. And Alex, actually, if you go back to some of those examples from that video... It makes everything look better.
Well, actually, I can point out that the lighting behind the thing there used to just be static, just with an on-off switch. But we've just last week hooked it up to the DMX board, so now we can adjust it for all the different. Yeah.
And he can do it from one location. How awesome is that?
It's a lot of fun to play with. Yeah, that is for sure.
And actually, there's someone in the studios in the chat room saying, "Oh, this is only for a 30x30 studio." It's for the smallest studio, and I've used the same sort of system for lighting stage. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is a standard. It's good to learn. It's good to know, and it's good to learn. And it's not that expensive. We're going to put links in the doc, but again, you can get these light bars for under $100. You can get the larger light bars for between $100 and $200, depending on how much quality you want to pay for. And these control panels will cost you $40. What I would suggest, order it on Amazon Prime. If you're a podcaster, set up a set behind you, and if you don't like it, return it. But I guarantee you, you're gonna go, "Oh, I want more of this. This looks good. This makes me look sexy."
Well, that's what we have. You're going to need a lot of lights, Padre.
Aw.
Oh, I'm kidding. Downstairs, we have those racks of things that normally just looks like clutter. But then when you put the lights behind them, it kind of makes it, makes it look more like a set. Makes
sci-fi.
It look, I like it.
Speaking of sci-fi, hey, Brian, we've got a brand new sponsor for Know How.
Does this one come from the future?
It does come from the future. And
in the future.
Now, let me ask you this. Our cable TV or our TV experience has been upgraded from, say, 30 years ago, right?
I suppose.
30 years ago, we were all over the air, and then we were cable or satellite, and now most of us are going to internet TV.
Yes. Yeah.
How about our cell phones? Do you still use your landline and your rotary phone?
I don't even have a landline anymore.
Exactly.
There's just a gaping hole on the side of the wall in my house now.
And it's not just that. It's also, how about your smoke detector? Your smoke detector can be connected to the internet. Your thermostat can be connected to the internet. Your home security system can be connected to the internet. I mean, all these parts of our life, of our home, have been upgraded to include the cloud, the internet, and all those Internet of Things things,
Right. What's this one do?
So, well that's the thing. Why is it, if all those things have been updated, that we're still using doorbells? Like old-fashioned doorbells, like ring it, come to the door, and see who's there.
And you know what ends up happening? Is I, like, peek out the window and try and hope that the person isn't looking at the shade and like, nobody's home.
Exactly.
Nope, so, don't want to answer the door.
Call screening for your door. Yeah. That doesn't work right.
Right.
Unless, of course, you have this. This is the Ring. This is a video doorbell. And I got to say, this is the fulfillment of what the internet generation should be using. Let me point out really quickly, one of the things I love about this, if you go ahead and go to the side view here, Alex, is they include everything you're going to need. So you've got the doorbell. This is the Ring doorbell. They even give you the mounting hardware that you're going to need. So you get the level, you get the driver, the drill bit. Pretty much everything you need to install this in an afternoon is included in the box.
Yeah, the only thing that's missing is the drill, the electric drill, which, you know, you should have on hand.
That would make the box a lot bigger.
Yeah, that might be a little bit more expensive. Yeah. But I thought that was pretty cool that they have the bit in there.
Now, the way that this works is actually very cool. Come back to the wide here. So this is... again, it replaces your doorbell.
Right.
It can be powered in two ways. One, if you have power coming to your doorbell, this will actually run off of that power.
Nice.
But it also has an internal lithium-ion battery that will last for up to a year, and you just charge it via a USB cable. So once a year, you
perfect.
Take it off and, you know, charge it up. But it connects to your home Wi-Fi system, and then when someone presses the bell, it will actually reach out to your app on your smartphone, on your tablet, mm-hmm. and it will show you a picture. It's a video of who's in front of your door, and you can have a two-way conversation with them.
That I love that, but you know what I loved even more when we were checking this out at Mobile Focus mm-hmm. was that you can change what the doorbell, the sound is.
Right.
So they played, it was like Domo Arigato.
Domo Arigato, yeah.
And the bane of my existence is that every time someone hits the doorbell, Tibbs, my corgi, flips out. Like, he totally knows that there's a stranger at the door. And, you know, you open the door and he's like, oh, hey, pet me.
I see that.
But he bark, 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 bark. If I could change it to a different noise, maybe he'd get used to that, but or if it played like a song or something, like I would know, and he would flip out.
That's the customizability of Ring. Now, this is not just a doorbell that gives you a two-way conversation. It's also a doorbell that you could subscribe to their DVR system so that it can actually record anytime someone comes in front of your door.
Right.
Now, this is huge. Imagine if you could put on YouTube all those videos of your FedEx guy just throwing packages at your door. Or the person who comes and kind of like doesn't do anything, that scopes out. In my family, we had a thing in Vegas where people were scoping out the house while my sister was living in there.
To see if people were home or not?
Yeah. Oh. And I guess they had scoped out the house a couple of times, and they broke the front window. And my sister was like, who the hell is that? And they ran off.
Yeah.
But it made them really paranoid. And so they were asking me, is there some sort of solution we can use? We got
this
drop
cams. This is what you would want, yeah.
This is what you would want. Yeah. You want something in the front porch so that every time someone approaches the door, it actually records a video. And if something happens, you've got video evidence on Ring's DVR system that you can go back to.
I especially like the package thing because I've gotten some beat up boxes and I have to wonder, this guy toss it over the fence or what?
Now, over 95% of home break-ins do happen during the day. That's exactly what happened to my family. And burglars will almost always start by ringing your doorbell to see if someone's home before they ransack your home. Now, with this video doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. Their advanced motion detection does alert you. Like as I said, if someone doesn't ring the bell but kind of loiters in the front, you'll still get a notification. You could still have it take a video, take a picture. Now, you can put your mind at ease and protect your home with this video doorbell, the one that Time magazine named one of the top 10 gadgets of 2014. As I said, it does dual power, so don't worry about having to run wires to the front door. If you don't have a bell there already, you can just run it off the internal battery for up to a year, and it connects to your home Wi-Fi, so it's not like you have to pay another subscription fee just to get your Ring connected to the internet. Now, right now, you can get the Ring video doorbell for only $174. That's $25 off the normal price. Normally, this thing goes for about $200. Because you're a loyal Twit listener, we're going to give you $25 off. Protect your home and have peace of mind with Ring by going to ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support of Knowhow. A funny story. I'm going to be visiting my family for Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And before I knew that they were going to become an advertiser, my dad calls me and he goes, hey, I just got this Ring doorbell. Can you help me install it when you get here?
That's like, awesome. Yeah. It works with iOS and Android. So, sorry, Alex, no Windows Phone at the moment.
And actually, we're going to have one installed in the front door here.
They're
also installing one at Leo and Lisa's home.
I want one at the no hole.
Right. Like, just push this button before you come around
exactly.
the corner.
Brian, I'm standing right here. No. Press the button. Press the button.
We have rules. Yeah. We have rules. Speaking of rules, we broke all of them by going to Maker Faire this weekend. By the way, thank you very much for coming with me.
That was a blast. I had a great
long
time.
Saturday. So
it was a long Saturday followed by a long Sunday. But you know what? That was my first Maker Faire, and I'm really glad we went because that was a lot of fun.
It was. And actually, the very first video that we shot at Maker Faire was with a company that's trying to change the way that you build your multi-rotor craft, your drone. So without further ado, Alex, push the magic button.
I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit with Twit TV, here at Maker Faire 2015. I'm standing next to David from Envy Drones, who's going to explain what they've been making to perhaps change the way that drones are forever constructed. David, what is this?
So, this is our Envy extender. It's a board that you attach to any drone or flight controller, and you can start writing apps right away using our board. There is no soldering required, it's plug and play.
Now, how is this different from other solutions that we've seen? I've seen some very advanced flight controllers that can build everything from GPS waypointing to collision avoidance. Why would I want a board that's separate from the flight controller?
So our board, we provide three libraries right now, Java, JavaScript, and Arduino. So you can choose the language that you know best, and they're high-level languages. So you don't have to manage memory. You can write the code in your own style and call our APIs when you actually want them, right? So it's not like I have to understand this huge amount of code base written in C, inject my code in someone else's code, and try to manage that, right? It's daunting, right? So people spend years to build a drone solution. With us, you can have a prototype running in 1 week or two.
This is actually a solution that I've seen for more and more major manufacturers. In fact, at NAB this year, 3D Robotics released their Solo, and it's the same thing. They have a PixHawk controller in there, but it's a Linux computer that's actually issuing the controls to the flight controller. Now, let me ask you this. What's your hope for this? Because obviously this is a maker bonanza. This is the ability to take something like the DJI or a home-built quadcopter, use a really simple flight controller, something like a KK or a Flip 32, and then build in an app, actually design apps to make your quad do advanced features. Where would you like to see this positioned in, say, a year?
So we want to become like de facto standard. And so you said, like, you mentioned like 3D robotics, right? We have also DJI. They have also an SDK, right? But if you choose DJI, you're locked down with the DJI hardware. If you choose 3D Robotics SDKs, you're locked down with 3D Robotics stuff, right? We are agnostic. We don't care what hardware, we don't care what flight controller. You want to write your app, you want to switch the drone to something bigger that can carry more weight, you just unplug this thing, plug it in a new flight controller, and it's done.
Now, this is fantastic technology. I believe we're going to get you on Coding 101 and on Know How. This is a great crossover episode. If you are interested in all, in quadcopters or autonomous vehicles, you're going to want to check out Envy Drones. Now, if they want more information, where can they go online to find out about your products?
They can come and visit developers.envydrones.com. We have the documentation there. We have code examples and quick start guides. So you can check for yourself if it's actually easy, as we tell you. And you can also do the pre-order there and have it shipped in July.
I'm Father Robert Ballester here at Maker Faire 2015, and drones are getting smarter.
We're going to have them on a crossover between Coding 101 and Know How, because it's perfect. I mean, if you're building a drone,
yeah,
it's great to add smarts, and they're actually going to show us how to code the back end, which I could use, because the last three times I've done that, I've crashed horribly.
Well, we'll have to get Lou probably to help us out. But I love the idea of being able to customize it to what you want to do.
Yeah. Well, what I really like is the fact that it will work with pretty much any flight controller, because it supplies a PWM signal, mm-hmm, just like your receiver would, to the flight controller. So, you know, it controls your craft the same way that you would, except now you could program smarts into it. So, for example, I could add GPS capability to a KK-equipped craft, which normally won't take GPS,
right,
because the board, the Envy Drones board, is actually handling all the complex computations, and it's just passing on flight instructions to the flight controller.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. It's got a little piggyback system.
Yeah. Before we get to your questions, there were a few things that I've been playing with over the last couple of weeks that...
I've
been geeking out on. I kind of wanted to share... as you know, we got ourselves a 3D printer, which we then had to send back. But then
Pretty quickly. But then you got another one
because I actually had a lot of filament that I wanted to use up, and I'm probably going to have to send it back. But that's okay. That's later on. Here are some of the things that we've printed up. Actually, I do like this. This is a good the side shot here. This is a Raspberry Pi enclosure box. Now, you may notice it's really big. That's because I've done a couple of things here. First, I've included this touchscreen. Now, I'm running this is OSMC, the Open Source Media Center.
Oh, okay.
This is not working yet. I have to get this to interface properly with the kernel. Give me a couple of days. I'll get that figured out. Mm-hmm. But There was a question on the new screensavers, and I told them that they could try making one of these.
Yeah.
What I want to do is I want to be able to display video and navigation information, because this is a touchscreen
right
here, and then have a video out so that, like, you could push it out to the entertainment system of a van, you know, that has in-car entertainment. Mm-hmm. But the big, the real reason why I wanted an enclosure like this is there's actually a lot of space in the base here, and I figured out that it's the perfect size for... Do you remember those small LiPo packs that we have for the FPV 250?
Yeah, so you're thinking of attaching some external power?
If you open up those packs and take out the single cells,
yeah,
you can fit two of them exactly in the
nice
bottom of this box. And a Raspi will run on 3.7 volts.
For how long?
Well, with two packs, it'll go about 4 hours.
That's perfect.
Yeah, and so what's nice about that is if you had it in, say, a car for a trip, you don't have to worry about losing power every time you turn off the car.
Right.
This and will then actually the keep running.
Yeah, and that's bad for the Pi, too, if it automatically
Linux
just gets
like that
clicked off. Yeah.
Yeah, Linux really hates when you crash. So
just
that's,
like people.
That's one of the things I've been working on. And by the way, this I love the fact that I can print these things up. I just
as you need like, them. Yeah, or how it fits your application. Right. Cool.
This is something else that I've been working on. This is actually a stabilizer for a KK2.1.5 board. One of the issues that people have been having is that with the KK mounted straight to the frame of the 250...
There's too much vibration, right?
Too much vibration. And it throws off the KK, and you end up having really noisy descents and strange inputs every once in a while. This uses a 3D-printed little shelf along with some of these rubber ball dampeners. And so the vibration actually doesn't make it all the way to the KK. It works wonders
yeah
for fixing those little errors.
I remember you telling me about this, and where a big problem was landing and taking off,
yeah,
because there's a lot of vibration and
air
wash and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that would probably help land a little bit smoother and
exactly
stuff.
That's what I'm hoping. And this thing is super light. I've actually designed this mount so that it will fit straight onto the chassis of the Alien X or a Flame Wheel.
Oh, okay.
So we'll try it on that over the weekend. This is something else. This was just for fun. I just made this. This is a NASA controller. These don't fit really well on anything because they're not like the KK. They don't have a lot of mounting holes. It's just this. So most people just double side tape this thing to their chassis.
And that's
which
not that
I,
great
I don't
of a solution.
Like that. So I created this. This actually fits directly into the center tub of a FPV 250 frame, the Diatone 250. It's snug. It fits
nice
perfectly. It's exactly contoured for that. In fact, the reason why I'm not putting in one is once you put it in, you are not getting
it
out.
Oh, okay.
It's in there forever. You don't have to stick it. It just goes.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Are you going to be sharing your little models?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
all of these are going to be available.
Cool.
Well, I got to get some of the... Like this, right now, it's way too dense. This thing is ridiculously heavy compared to what it needs to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's like 90% density. I could probably
ooh
get away with 30%.
It feels strong, Padre.
But it's heavy. You
yeah,
don't
you probably
add
don't
that much weight.
For a little mount like this, you probably don't need to be this dense.
Yeah, exactly. But the nice thing is it allows me to take my NASA, and now I can fit it straight into that little bay.
That fits so good.
I know. It's perfect, isn't it?
Nice.
It's so snug. Okay, now here's the last thing. You all know this. This is the KK frame. This is the FPV 250 frame. We all know it. We all love it. But, oh, what's that?
Is that some sort of
what did I do
little
there
cage? Like a custom cage?
This is a custom cage that I 3D printed. It can either go above or below. But what I've designed it to do is, so you've got all your electronics in here. You can actually Velcro or wire tie your battery pack on top or your camera on top. It gives you this nice flat surface.
Yeah.
So I'm actually good. I've made this for Tony because Tony's going to Hawaii and he's like, I can't strap my Mobius to the front. It doesn't stay.
Uh-huh.
He can now put a piece of foam to absorb the vibrations,
yeah,
and then put the Mobius camera and then put a piece of Velcro over the top.
That's
and the
awesome
nice thing is it stays above everything.
I love that idea.
Yeah. And now the other thing he could have done is he could have actually taken this cage and if you put it on the bottom, a Mobius fits exactly inside. The problem is you don't get that much room for foam.
Yeah.
Which means
it's going to
get
vibrate around.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So now this thing I had to create on my own. So this is the only thing that I had to make.
Oh, okay.
All of these other designs got straight off of Thingiverse. I had to modify this tray a tiny bit to make it work properly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I am having a blast.
Playing with the 3D printer.
Oh, I love that thing.
When are you going to bring it back to the studio so someone else can have a chance?
Nope.
Thanks a lot.
No.
You're a real pal.
I know. No, I will. I will. Actually, I'm working on a I don't want to say it's going to be a know-how project because I don't know if it's going to be successful, but...
it's not like we've brought on projects that weren't successful before.
I am working on a project where I'm actually 3D printing a lot of the frame for a 3D printer.
You're... Oh, okay.
It's like Inception.
Yeah.
Well, because the and you know this, the issue I've been running into, especially because I'm still using that XYZ DaVinci.
Yeah.
The bed is too small.
Yeah.
I need a bed that's at least 3 inches larger on the width, so that I could lay down some of these designs that I've been creating. And unfortunately, a commercial bed that's that big is probably going to run me $1,000 to $1,200.
Is that where the price starts to jump up a lot when you start getting to the bigger size beds?
Bigger sizes. So I'm trying to make one of my own. I'm thinking I could probably make it for about $300 and have a really competent machine. I need to 3D print the enclosure around it. And I think I could do that.
3D-ception.
It may look completely jank, but it's going to work.
As long as it works. Because, yeah, we were talking about if you ever wanted to do your own frame or something like that, you'd have to do segments and then try and attach them to each other, and there'd be weak points and stuff.
The frame is so much stronger when you can print it out in one piece
than
having a seam.
And it would be fun for prototyping. Like, maybe you have an idea for something and you wanted to prototype it, but, you know, it doesn't exist, so.
Well, we do want to get on to the questions, but before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank the second sponsor of this episode of Know How.
Linda?
Brian,
how's
your no-hole feeling?
Empty right now. Empty. I just finished my C++ class, so I need to move on. Thank you,
That deserves a fist bump. Now, you understand that the knowledge hole is in all of us.
Yes.
Yes. It's that longing for that new skill, for that bit of knowledge, for that bit of information that you need to fulfill yourself. Well, that's what Lynda.com
You'll
is
find
all about.
It. You'll find it on Lynda.
Lynda.com is your one-stop shop to find information about everything. It's not just about learning programming or learning computer skills. No. It's about learning job skills. If you want to take Excel training, if you want to do hobby training, if you want to be a better photographer, a better videographer, if you just want to do things like fixing... I don't know, your dress.
I don't know.
If you wear a dress.
You watched today's Know How episode and you saw the DMX lighting and maybe you wanted to learn how to do better lighting.
There you go. Yeah. Now, Know How loves Lynda.com because Lynda does fill in all those gaps in your knowledge hole. And they do it with style. Lynda.com is for problem solvers, for the curious, for the people who want to make things happen. And I know that's you because you're watching Know How. Maybe you do want to develop that next killer app. Maybe you do want to learn a programming language. Maybe you want to master Photoshop, sharpen your skills. With Lynda.com, you can have everything you need to feed that curious mind. Now, some of the new Lynda.com courses that I can recommend are up and running with Apple Watch, creating a responsive homepage marquee, and exploring photography, exposure, and dynamic range. We covered a little bit of that 3 weeks ago, and you guys loved it. Well, fill in the gaps with Lynda.com. I know that I've talked about Code Clinic before. It's a multi-course series where Lynda.com experts look at common code challenges and offer their solutions using C++, C#, Java, PHP, Python, and Ruby. Lynda.com has also just added 4 new entries covering JavaScript, C, R, and Swift. Now, with a Lynda.com membership, you can watch and learn from top experts who are passionate about learning. You can stream thousands of video courses on demand, and you can learn on your own schedule. One of the things I love about Lynda.com courses is that they have a transcript of all their videos. So if you're looking for a particular answer for a particular subject, you can go straight there rather than having to watch an entire segment. It's one of the things that sets Lynda.com apart from everybody else. You can take notes as you go, and you can refer to them later. You can download tutorials and watch them on the go on your Android or iOS device. You can create and save playlists of courses that you want to watch, customize your learning path, or share them with friends, colleagues, and team members. It's really there for you at Lynda.com. Now, your Lynda.com membership gives you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, I want you to visit Lynda.com/knowhow and sign up for a free 10-day trial. That's Lynda.com/knowhow and sign up for your free 10-day trial. Again, Lynda.com/knowhow, and we thank Lynda.com for their support of Know How. Brian,
what
time for questions?
Question and answer time.
What we got?
Our questions, their answers?
Yes, let's do that.
So the first one comes from, what do I do when I bork my network?
Bork.
This is from T. No Hands. I made a mistake configuring a managed switch and can no longer access the switch or even find it. The switch can only be restored to factory default via console port. All devices on the other side still function within the network, just can't access the switch for other configs. The console cable has a 9-pin serial from PC connection and RJ45 for the switch. Is there a way to use a Cat6 patch cable to use instead, because all the PC/laptops have 15-pin serial ports? Do I really need to buy an adapter cable? What would you suggest?
Well, first of all, I know T. No Hands. T. No Hands actually is differently abled, and he doesn't have use of his hands,
Which
is why he's T. No Hands. And I understand what you're talking about. This is actually something that we deal with in IT at all times. We use what's called out-of-band management.
Okay.
So here's how it works. If you have a network and you have an interface on that network for a particular device, and let's say that device is your router, and you're in that interface and you make a mistake and you bork the network, you misconfigure
then how do you get back in?
I mean, especially if you've got no ability to actually touch the device. After you put hands on the device,
I'd say reset switch. Yeah.
Right. Or get back in there and change the config. Well, how can you change the config if you can't access the configuration page because you borked the network?
Good question.
Which is why we use, again, what's called out-of-band. Out-of-band management, it was always a second network. It was a separate network from the main network. There's production and then there's management. And what it allowed us to do is it allowed us to use console servers and KVM servers to access servers and switches even if we didn't have access to the primary production network.
Right. Okay. So if the primary production network got borked, you could still...
I could still do it. And the kids, this is one of the ways I could do it. This is old. I've had this for a while. This is a Lantronix Spider. This is a single-port KVM. So on this side, I've got a VGA cable. VGA, that tells you how old this is. It was powered by USB, and then it had PS2 connectors for mouse and keyboard.
Haven't seen those in a while.
Exactly. So this literally plugged into the back of your server, and then what it had was you had a single Ethernet port here that I could plug into my out-of-band network. Now, what that meant was if the server for any reason became unresponsive, I could log into this. It would show me what was actually on the screen. Or if there was nothing on the screen, I could send a signal to this that would trigger the power distribution box
to reset
it. Cycle the power. Now, this was fantastic because it meant that I could have access to a server on a network that no one else could touch.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, that's one piece of gear that we use. This is actually far more common in the world of IT. This is what we call a serial console server. Now, this thing I really do love. OpenGear and Lantronix are my favoritest companies. This thing...
Speaking of borking things.
So this thing actually has 4 serial ports at the bottom. And I can have RJ45 to serial. So it's just a nice little cable, depending on what kind of hardware I use, because different hardware will have different pinouts.
Right.
But I can connect to 4 different devices, be they switches or network sensors, whatever they're going to be. And I can access it through a separate Ethernet network, which is right here.
Or cellular?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. So this gives me the ability to access it over Ethernet. I can use a Wi-Fi connection or... In here, there's actually a SIM slot, so I can put a cellular 3G, 4G connection, a chip, so I can access this even if the entire network goes dead.
That's cool. How much does this cost, though? This seems like it might be a little pricey.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as enterprise equipment goes...
Yeah, this is actually pretty... This is like $1,000.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, you don't have to buy something as expensive as this. Actually, what I want to do next... episode. I actually want to show you how some of this works. I'm going to bring up some switches that have serial console ports. Uh-huh. I'm actually modifying a Linksys WRT54G because some of those did have the pinouts for a serial port. So you can take one of those low-cost routers and actually turn it into an out-of-band manageable switch.
You have to, like, take off the case to
get
to it?
Take off the case. Okay. And, do a little bit of soldering. But it's really not a problem. And I've got some Lantronix boxes that are far lower cost. I mean, they're down into like $100 rather than $1,000. You don't get the cellular connectivity, but you do get the Ethernet connectivity and actually wireless connectivity.
Yeah, that seems like a very all in one package.
You know the cool thing about this? Yeah. If you put the cell of 3G, 4G chip in here, you can actually get internet off of this. You can plug your laptop into it. It becomes a cellular modem.
That's cool.
Yeah. This is a really nice box. I got a couple of these. And actually, you know what? T No Hands has been a member of the community for a long, long time. So I tell you what, the box that I'm going to use for next week's episode, I'm actually going to send it to you. So if you just email me your email address, it's a Lantronics Y box. It's fantastic because it's wirelessly connected. So you can actually have someone walk over there, just plug it in, and you'd have complete serial access to the network that you worked.
That's awesome.
There we go.
Cool, Vodger.
What else do we got?
All right, this one is Sprechen ze File Server. Comes from Talkie. Which is better for a file server, NFS or SMB?
And the answer is yes. All right, what
next
else
one.
Do we got, Brian? No, okay. we get this all the time, and the answer is whatever you use, really. NFS is really, it's native for Linux machines, but Windows machines will now speak it now.
Okay.
SMB is native for Windows machines, but you can get Linux machines to speak it. NFS is much faster if you're using a Linux machine. Okay. I'm talking like 2 to 4 times faster for transferring.
All right.
But SMB, which is also called SIFS, Common Internet File System, is much more easily supported if you're using a Windows machine. But here's the thing. If you're creating a file server like FreeNAS, or if you are buying a file server, something like a Synology box, you can turn on both protocols at the same time. There's no reason not to have SMB and NFS on at the same time.
There's no conflict? There's no speed difference?
You'll use the protocol that's fastest. For example, my Synology box runs both NFS and SIFS. And so when I am using my Windows machine, I'll go /\, and it knows to access over Samba.
Okay.
Right? When I use my Linux machines, it's going to default to NFS.
Yeah.
And that way, I get the fastest transfer for each machine, and no one has to be the wiser.
Cool. So the answer is yes.
Answer is actually yes.
And Brian, just so you're aware, our new PPS FS file server is all SMB shares.
Oh.
Samba! Boom.
Well, I learned something today.
So when you connect to assets or ingest or any of those other shares, it's all over SMB 3.0 or whatever that Windows 8 has.
What?
Save me your speak. As long as it works, that's all I care about.
Does it work?
Yeah, it does. Most of the time,
actually. Well, that one time. There was that one time.
That was a weird problem we had.
Okay.
We'll save that for another
yes,
time.
Yes, we got it.
We could talk about that all day. One more?
One more. Let's do one more.
Network camera overload. This comes from Paul Simmons. He's trying to plan an IP CCTV install for a new office. The problem is bandwidth. We are going to have 32 cameras that my boss wants running at 1080p with at least 15 frames per second. Okay. We will be using gigabit network equipment, using the camera's manufacturer bandwidth calculator. The cameras are going to be pulling around 580 megabits per second. This is obviously going to put a lot of strain on the network, And is there a way you can set up two networks, one for CCTV and one for general use, but with the CCTV NVR accessible from both so that recorded and live footage can be viewed from a computer on the network?
And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Done.
We know that this has been a lot of information for this episode. No,
good luck with that.
All right. We did cover this. I think this was in episode like 132.
Is this when we were setting all the IP
cameras? Well, no, this
cameras?
Was when we were talking about like really large networks that get overloaded.
Oh, right. Okay.
But let me rehash it for you really quickly, because actually it is a very good question. We're getting this more and more, where we used to think gigabit was a lot. Like, how will I ever fill a gigabit pipe? And now
we also used to think that a gig of RAM was a lot, or less than that, like a few megabytes of RAM was a lot.
Exactly. There actually is no reason to create two different networks. The easiest way to do it is just to use what's called network segmentation. So, for example, if I've got... Oh, I was going to draw here, but I don't want to erase the know-how. If I've got two networks, one has a switch that's connected to all the cameras, one of which is connected to all the computers, and then I have a third switch in the middle that connects those two switches together.
Okay.
What will happen is that all the network traffic, unless it's specifically doing a broadcast
to the entire network, or if it's accessing a computer that's on this other network, or if a computer is accessing one of the cameras,
yeah.
it's going to stay on that side.
Okay.
It will only stay on that side. Now, the advantage to doing it that way is, as you said, it means that you have free access between the two segments. You can access the DVR. You can access the individual cameras. But it means that you're also not going to overload your production. I'm going to call this production. You're not going to overload your production network with all the camera traffic.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a few things to do if you're going to do it that way, though. The first thing is you have to turn off what's called multicast. Some network cameras have that set up so that they basically just spam the network. It's very useful if you are trying to do some sort of live broadcast, but if you have 32 cameras all spamming the network at the same time, it's going to blow up. And yeah. and multicast packets and broadcast packets actually will go across that third route or that third switch. It will bridge, and what will happen is you'll create a packet storm. So turn that off. Turn off multicast.
It's called a packet storm?
It's a packet storm.
That's yeah. awesome. Yeah.
When the data center, when all the lights are going, packet storm. Yeah. Now, if you are really, really worried about that happening, like let's say you still want to be able to access the NVR, but you don't want any user to be able to actually access any of the cameras, you can do what's called dual homing. If your NVR box has two Ethernet ports, you can set one for like 192.168.1.1 and the other one 192.168.2.1. Those two networks, subnets, will not be able to speak to each other, but any device on either of those two networks will be able to speak to the network video recorder.
Okay. So kind of like a VLAN?
Well, I mean, it's not a VLAN. It's actually, so a VLAN would be, hold on.
Oh, here's the is it a packet store? That's what's happening inside the computer.
That's exactly what, yeah.
And the little Tron bikes are going by, too.
A VLAN is a management tool inside of networking. This actually sets up two separate networks.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So no need to create two separate networks. You can if you want. What I would suggest is, because it's actually very little effort to go from one model to the other, start with having a three-switch solution. So you've got one switch for your network cameras, one switch for production, and then you've got your management switch in the middle. And that's typically the more expensive one, so you can make sure that that the traffic doesn't always broadcast across.
Three more feedbacks?
Can we do one more?
With Alex?
Alex, can we?
I don't know what that means now.
Probably shouldn't.
Okay, fine. You know what?
No. We had some really good ones.
We actually had some really good ones.
Sorry, Jonathan. We'll do it next sorry, Michael.
Michael and sorry. Jonathan Turner, Michael Banzon, and Ray Davis. We had you.
So email Alex at twit.tv about how we didn't get to your feedback.
Or tweet him at ANELF3 at that's at.
Now remember that we have Twitch at 12:30.
Okay.
Fine.
That's it. That's the end of the show, everybody.
That's it for this episode of Know How. No, we know that this was a lot of information to take in, so we're going to give you show notes. Brian, where do they find those?
twit.tv/KH, and all our shows are there on demand. You can subscribe to HD, SD, and whatever video size that you would like. And yeah, the Padres, well, last week was a little light on the show notes. I don't really remember. I'm not 100% sure what we talked about. But there are weeks where
we're messing around.
There are weeks where we do lots of parts lists or
anytime we do a build, like a build is going to be very, very intensive.
So check that out.
Yeah. Also, don't forget that you could find us on the Twitters. I'm twitter.com/PadreSJ.
And I am at @cranky_hippo. And you'll want to check that out because we usually do behind-the-scenes tidbits. Like, we had a few pictures from Maker Faire and
Stabbing Robot!
why didn't we show that?
Oh,
because it's on Saturday.
Some other shows stole some of our coverage.
We had really good content, but there's this, I don't know, what is this show called?
I don't know.
The new screensavers or something. So check that out on Saturday.
It's very cool. You're going to want to watch Saturday's episode because that thing is probably the coolest thing at Maker Faire.
And Martin Sargent's going to be on.
And that's actually a perfect segment for Martin Sargent.
It is. Yeah. I think he honestly told Leo that it was a bad idea to have him as a host, but he's going to do it. So.
And actually, the Google engineer was like, this is a bad idea to have this, but we did it anyway. Anyway, so
he did. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, if you have any complaints about the show, like, for example, that we didn't cover any of the feedback at the end, be sure to tweet at ANELF3. That's twitter.com/ANELF3 to get to our TD, Alex Gumbel.
That's all right.
Yeah. Also, I just have something to say. That today we were supposed to unveil the technological and stylistic innovation of the know-how host cams, but I think somebody forgot to bring them.
No. I just got the last component last night. I didn't have time to assemble it.
No, he did it on purpose, Alex. He didn't forget.
We'll have it next week. We'll have it next week.
We'll try that next week.
Also, don't forget that you can find us on our Google Plus page. It's a great community. 8,500 plus members. It's incredibly active.
That's where we get all our questions from, and people post their projects and crash videos.
We've got three projects that you guys all created in the can that we want to show if Alex will let us. So make sure to put it in there. Get us some video. Get us some pictures. We love hearing from you, even if it's not quadcopters.
Yeah. Definitely.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go do it.
Cool.
And thank you to our live studio audience.
Thank you, Jason. Hey!